Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Side of Voice. A few weeks ago, you may have enjoyed listening to our episodes discussing CiderCon, the United States nationwide trade conference that Adam and I were lucky enough to go to. Adam's joining me again today, although for one episode only, you were freed from Justin's maniacal laughing. But today we're going to talk about CraftCon, which is the UK's only nationwide cider making trade conference. And to celebrate that, I'm drinking a lovely bottle of Ailey, which is a 2021 vintage Perry from some good friends of mine that I am delighted to welcome for their first appearance on Cider Voice. Tom and Lydia from Artist Draw Cider, how are you guys doing?
We're very well, thank you.
Hello, yeah, fine, thanks, Albert. Nice to see you.
Thanks for having us.
Adam, of course, you're here as well. How are you getting on today? Unfortunately, you're a little bit full of cold, I hear.
Yeah. No technical malfunctions today. Just what's it called? Immune system malfunctions. But I mean, the episode is young. There might yet be technical malfunctions as well, but we'll get through it.
Fingers crossed, no. So I'm just going to tell people a little about my impressions of this Ailey, because it's extremely delicious. Made from a tree that you guys haven't been able to identify, which is disappointing because it's so tasty. I might actually have to ask you to get me some graftwood of it because I've ordered some pear rootstocks, if there's anything available.
It's a bit of a sad story because the owner, who I hope isn't listening to this podcast and probably would be, decided that to make the view better from his his bedroom window, he just locked the top off of all of these really old peri pear trees, so now they're practically dead. So we haven't been making 2021. I mean, it really is horrific.
People just horrifying. Wow. Well, that's sad. That's not what I expected to hear. It's great. You know, it tastes like pear juice and kiwi fermented out to a beautiful 6.2%. Very, very dangerously sessionable.
Well, and yeah. I was going to say as well, we learned last week, at the time of recording this, yet to be recorded, but Laura has created an amazing bakery recipe for us using Ailey, which we learned about last year. So it is a multi-purpose peri. And I think the first peri, therefore, or drink of any sort that has featured twice on Cider Voice.
And you know what? I was so careful not to pick up that absolutely delicious one that I was talking, raving about like a couple months ago, because I've got another bottle of it. I can't remember the name of it. Lydia, what is it? The one with the bright red label that's dry.
Red that's dry. Oh, Strange Shrew.
That's it. Yeah, banging. I almost drank it again tonight, but I was like, no, I'll have something new. But no, you're right, Adam.
Nobody gets the music reference for that one at all.
To be honest, I'm very bad at music. I don't get any music references that anybody makes ever.
I mean, nobody's got that one. I thought it was a classic album from 1968, but apparently the only person who knows and loves that album, apart from Grant Hutchison, also appreciated it.
Well, to any of our listeners, if you get the reference of Strange Shrew, please write in and Lydia will be delighted. Your big clue is that it's a 1968 album. We'll see if anyone knows it.
I was going to say, if you get the anagram on the label as well, you get double points.
Well, there's an anagram on the label. I haven't looked close enough.
It's one of the best anagrams. I mean, I haven't done many anagrams, but that one's up there with the best.
One of the best anagrams. What makes a good anagram?
I suppose, I don't know, actually.
I'd say that a good anagram is one where it actually forms, you know, a or two distinct words, and it's not a jumble of meaningless letters at the end.
So it says larger on there, which is an anagram of the name of the album. And I just quite like that, you know, larger daisies feels somewhat relevant. You know, we're planting a lovely orchard full of nice wildflowers and stuff. So I don't know, there felt like some kind of, I was pretty happy when I came up with that.
Perfect. Well, then we got two clues. Larger Daisies, 1968. Get in touch to Cider Voice and then buy the cider. Well, you probably need the cider to do it. But Lydia and Tom, then, please, can you tell us about Artist Draw Cider? What is this orchard that you're planting? Let people know about you guys.
Shall I go first?
I was leaving it wide open for you.
Thanks. So, yeah, Artist Draw Cider. So I'm Tom. My darling wife Lydia is the other one. It's just two of us. And we got going in 2017. We moved to Letton in Herefordshire and hired my cousin's cottage and started a very small scale to try and make cider to sell rather than cider just for personal consumption. Fast forward to now, we've got our own place with a 2-acre orchard with 100 trees in it so far. We make, what, about 8,000-ish bottles a year, approximately?
Yeah. So the orchard is, it's all been grafted by us. Oh, well, actually, it's been grafted by Tom because I'm not very good at grafting. I end up, like, whittling rootstocks down to, I don't know, chips of tiny bits of wood. But we've got, I think we're at 101 varieties in the orchard now. So we have we have some stuff in a nursery bed as well and some things in pots that are not in the orchard. In the orchard planted itself, we've got about 60 varieties, but on the site, across the whole of our small holding, we're up to 101 varieties. And some of those are kind of really obvious stuff, like, you know, Dabernet, Yarlington. And then we've got some kind of less well-known stuff, like...
Crimp's mango, maybe.
Crimp's mango apple is... Well, we don't know what the variety is, but it tastes like mango, and my surname is Crimp, so it became known as Crimp's mango apple, for want of a better name at the time, until we ID it. But I think it's the most delicious apple I've ever eaten. I ate about 20 of them in an hour. It was incredible. But I've not had one since 2017, so we're waiting for it to grow so I can stuff my face again. But yeah, some of the actual kind of well-known, some of the other kind of rare varieties we've got... Tom.
At Skirms Kernel, we've got Metes. We do grow Bridstow Wasp, which is not, it's not really a cider apple, but it makes an interesting cider.
Lovely cider.
What else do we do? Knotted Kernel, our beloved. There's other stuff in there. Oh, well, we think we've identified Golden Harvey in another orchard that we use that we've grafted, which is an exciting, late, sort of sharp, old Herefordshire apple, which is,
I've asked you guys for some graft wood for our own orchard this year, and one of the varieties that I think I even put on my list without really thinking about it, it was St. Edmund's Pippin that you've got there. I saw people talking about it this week as a kind of very rare lost variety that was in demand. Have you had any fruit from that? What's that one like?
As far as I'm aware, we've not had a St. Edmund's Pippin. I'd quite like to eat one.
Yeah, I mean, this is a strange thing. So there's so many trees in our orchard that we haven't actually even seen in flesh before. They're just things that we've read about in books, and then we've managed to find someone that's got scion somewhere, and then they've sent it to us and we've grafted it. So I mean, our orchard could end up producing a whole load of stuff that is maybe absolutely terrible for making cider. We've absolutely no idea, but if that happens, then we'll be able to top work some of it and we'll kind of go from there. But I mean, some stuff we've even found growing at the side of the road and marked it on a map and then been back and taken scion from that in kind of January or whatever and grafted it. So we've got a couple that are kind of cool things like lay by early and stuff like that, for want of a better name. Quite an odd assortment.
A9 Pippin.
I think that's fantastic. I've been thinking about it myself recently as well, because we're top working over our Harry Masters orchards and putting in new varieties there and really jumping in at the deep end and putting in a whole row of the stuff. And we've got this row of Knotted Kernel that Tom has just there described as your baby. My dad has experience of Knotted Kernel that he treasures and that people who drank it treasure, but I've never had a Ross and Wye Knotted Kernel. And this year was the first year where there was a small amount of fruit that we harvested, and it's terrible. It's like cardboard in the fruit. There's no juice. And you guys were like, oh, yeah, that's just how it is, but it's worth it.
Painful thing to pick, because they're phenomenally tall trees as well. I mean, the ones that we pick from are about 40 foot tall. And then the fruit is absolutely tiny. And as you say, completely dry. So you have to pick so much of it, and it takes absolutely forever. But the juice you get from it is so... I mean, last year it was, the hydrometer was like bouncing out of it. It was so sugary. So yeah, I think if you let it go to dry, you'll end up with something at about 10% want to, well, for, don't want to wade into a whole like conversation about duty, but yeah, watch it. Don't make too much.
It will end up at exactly 8.4% and not a drop more than that.
Quite right too.
Quite right. Exactly. Yeah, so not a kernel, amazing. Yeah, our trees are super, super vigorous as well, actually, for the top works. Yeah. They're some of the biggest and the sturdiest as well in the orchard. So, I mean, it's fascinating to imagine in your mind the first person that stumbled across that tree, wherever they found it, picked these beautiful looking apples, right? And then went home and put them on their horrendously inefficient 19th century press, sent their horse around in circles and went, well, there's nothing coming out. But then persevered and has handed it down all the way to us, to where you're foolishly including it in your orchard as well, only to compound the misery for future generations. But if they don't listen to this podcast, they won't know.
We're finding weirdly that actually as the summers get hotter, the fruit from not a kernel is getting bigger. So it's smaller on cooler years. So it might be a rare apple that actually benefits from the hideous effects of climate change. So yeah, it's one of my ones I think is probably quite good as a sort of future-proofing variety. We can all just get really, really drunk on incredibly strong knotted kernel and everything hits the fan.
I do like that.
It was the variety in 2022 when we had that really hot, dry summer that kind of basically we got the same litres per sack as we normally do, whereas everything else we got, you know, a couple of litres less per sack, so... It responded to the heat quite well, I thought.
To your point, Albert, I think there's a huge amount in cider and perry that owes quite a lot to some people a few hundred years ago being incredibly patient and persevering when things went hideously wrong. I mean, I always wonder who was the first person, you know, have like these early quotes about the people who made perry hundreds of years ago, but I always wonder who was the first person to actually try a nice perry, because there's so many issues.
Centuries of mousy, vinegary perry, and everyone's like, oh, it's the best we got, and then someone made one good by accident.
I reckon there was a complete fluke the first time anyone ever made perry. And like, the legend of the nice perry was handed down for centuries and generations. People were just like, honestly, if you keep going, eventually one will be all right.
It's in fact, the first time you make cider, it is inevitably the best drink you ever made, and the legend of which carries on forever.
I think I remember you telling me a story, Tom, about how when you, before you set up Artistraw, you entered like one of your very early ciders into an amateur competition, and it ended up coming second to one that had been made by someone who was definitely not an amateur.
Well, he handed me a business card in the prize giving queue, which I thought wasn't necessarily the most amateurish thing to do.
If Tom hadn't entered that competition, we would never ever have started Artistraw, but we would madly thought that was our destiny after Tom got second in that competition and then like chucked in our lives in London and moved to Herefordshire without really thinking about it much.
Well, that's really cool. I hadn't realized it was you know, as because I know that Tom used to obviously make all this cider, you know, going back to kind of when you were at university, I think you said, and so I hadn't realized that the competition was sort of later in the journey than that. I thought that was a you know, the kind of miraculous first attempt.
No, I heard about it because at the time I was working as a drayman in London for Orbit Beers, who make fantastic beers. You should definitely try them. And I think it was their operations wizard, Robbie, that put me in touch with the idea of this competition in Camden Town Hall for amateur cider makers that he'd seen on the socials or whatever. So, yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, I'll put some cider into that.
Epic. And Lydia, I mean, my understanding is that you know, the actual cider making was a kind of secondary consideration for you when you moved to Herefordshire, and that it's you know, just become something that you know, you've been inexorably like dragged into cider world proper, I suppose, since moving over.
Definitely. No, I wasn't ever going to do more than just do the labels for it, basically. But it was going to be Tom's little side hustle, and it was never going to be more than that. And then I was still working in London and commuting quite a lot. And then the pandemic happened, and I lost all my work overnight. And then Tom got a job basically doing some contracting work for his old work in physics and solar cell research. And he was like, well, we've started doing this thing and you'll just have to take over my side hustle now and make all the cider. And then I got really obsessed with it very, very quickly. So basically made like three times the amount that Tom had ever made in 1 year. And then we had to sell it all. And then I just never went back to the theatre, basically. Just got so, so interested in it all. I think it's just, it ticks so many boxes for me. You know, culturally, I think it's really interesting. I really enjoy all the folklore stuff around it. Being outside and planting stuff, I've always been an outdoorsy person. So yeah, it ticks all the boxes. Plus, you know, delicious booze. So it's a winner, making cider.
And to be fair, your love of spreadsheets means you're much better at the records than I am.
I do quite like a spreadsheet.
I'm not surprised, actually, that Lydia is slightly more organised than Tom, based off knowing you both for 5 or 6 years now. So we'll quickly bring on there. The one thing I want to talk to you guys about as well is your work in the environment. I mean, probably Artistral more than a lot of other cideries is so synonymous with sustainability, the environment, the natural way of doing things. How important is that to you guys? And can you tell us also about your work with the river?
You can talk about the river stuff because that's your thing really, isn't it? But yeah, I'd say that stuff is why we do Artistral at all. Like that was kind of the driving force behind it. So as well as, I mean, we did kind of move on a bit of a whim and set up a cidery, but we were also at that point trying to find something that we could do together that would be the most sustainable way of living and working. And we want to roll our work in with something that was as good for the planet as possible. And cider making seemed to tick all of those boxes. You know, it's a really done right. It's I think the lowest intervention, the greenest way of producing a drink possible. You're just using fruit from lovely old orchards and nothing else really. So nothing else at all, in fact. But yeah, I really, the kind of the orchard restoration work is really, really important to us. Like finding these old orchards and bringing them back to good health again is a big part of what we do. Just we're constantly kind of striving to reduce our carbon footprint associated with cider production as well. So a big bit of that is the glass bottles for us. So we're sort of, yeah, trying to tackle that at the moment. So it feels like the next big thing to do. That's very rambly. Say something better.
No, that's absolutely bang on. Yeah, I mean, I'm what you would call a doomer. I think I'm not very sort of positive about humanity's impact on the ecology. So I thought a bit of land in Herefordshire, great place to be. So here we are making cider, and then I've been kind of into not saving the planet, but I've been into
definitely saving the planet.
Tread lightly and trying to kind of look to the future for a long time, really since about 1998, and it's kind of dictated where my career's gone and so on. And then in 2020, it became obvious that the river was in real trouble, and we had that sort of warm, dry, hot spring, lots of sunshine, and then the river went green right up into the headwaters, and which definitely is not right. And even the Why on Us Foundation did a press release and kind of put the cat amongst the pigeons a bit. And so Friends of the Upper Wye was born, and off we went, and within a couple of weeks had basically decided that the lack of data about the health of the river because of austerity, cutting back the Environment Agency and Natural Resources Wales to basically nothing. We would run a citizen science project to find out where the pollution was coming from, why we were seeing these algal blooms and stuff. And I mean, fast forward 3.5 years, it's been a hell of a ride, but we've got a big network now in our patch of over 120 volunteers. We've got a dashboard which shows the data for the entire catchment, so that's four collaborating groups, Actually, big news, Friends of the Upper Y and Friends of the Lower Y have recently merged on the 1st of February officially. So we're now officially a Charities Commission registered CIO. Just submitted our first annual report and accounts, if anyone wants to have a look. And onwards and upwards. Extraordinary. It's become an election issue, which I think for me, the idea that river water quality and the health of the rivers is so important. Actually, people don't realise we live on a planet that's 2/3 water, and all the ways that we abuse our rivers ends up in the seas, and we abuse our seas as well. And if we're not careful, we'll end up damaging them too much. So it's kind of become an election issue, and I'm delighted to see that.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you guys. I'm going to use that to start talking about the big theme for the podcast, which is the Free County Cider and Perry Association and CraftCon. So for our listeners who don't know, the Free County Cider and Perry Association, which even the acronym TCCPA takes a long time to say, so we're going to try and avoid saying it wherever necessary or wherever possible, was founded in 1993, bringing together small cider makers, although not all of them were that small originally, really, from across the three counties, which is Herefordshire, Gloucestershire and Worcestershire. So bit of a distinct region compared to the West Country, which is a more widely known term internationally, because Herefordshire and the rest of the three counties isn't actually part of the West Country, but in that band, and has been involved in promoting the interests of cider makers, connecting cider makers and educating cider makers for all of this time, 31 years now. And about a week ago, I actually was elected as chair of the association, and Lydia, I'm glad to say, was elected as the vice chair of the association, and Tom is the treasurer of the association. So we are very much part of the heartbeat of the association as it currently is today, and it means a lot to all of us. Tom and Lydia, will you guys just tell everybody about, you know, how long you've been involved with the association, and what you do for it, and how much you enjoy what we get out of it, all of us?
It was the end of sort of January 2018, the first meeting I went to. I remember it was at Weston's in Muchbuckle, and loads of cider makers there. I hardly knew anybody. All I knew is that as a new arrival in the cider making space in Herefordshire, it'd be good to meet some other like-minded individuals and chat. And I'm very glad I turned up, because of course I met all sorts of exciting people like Tom Oliver and James Marston. And I think I even may have volunteered my services at that meeting, I think. And off we went.
So I got involved, I can't remember what year it was, maybe it's 2018, because I was hired by the TCCPA to organise the Cider and Perry Festival at the Royal Three Counties Show. So it was kind of my first, I suppose, paid gig outside of my theatre work in London. So it felt like a really good sort of first step into changing my career. So I did that for a couple of years, organising talks and kind of a mini conference, but at a kind of agricultural show where nobody really wanted to listen to a talk on cider. So I think you gave a talk one year, didn't you, Albert?
I can't remember. Oh, possibly to about two people. Yeah, I do vaguely remember that. yeah, way back when.
It was quite a hard gig, but it was good. And yeah, for what it was worth. It was worth it at the time, just sort of learning more about cider and getting to know everyone who was involved in it. And then last year I joined the committee because I really believe that this is a really good way of a small makers banding together and having a big impact collectively on the kind of the future of cider in this country. And I think, I mean, I get an enormous amount out of it because it's just hugely social and there's some really, really interesting people involved. So the access you get to sort of, you know, cider makers who've been doing this for much longer than we have is amazing. I would also say, it's a bit of a pitch, that I think a lot of makers across the country don't realise it's open to them as well. We're not, even though our name is the Three Counties Cider and Perry Association, we're representing makers across the whole of the UK. So actually a good percentage of our members are from outside of the three counties. And you don't have to be a cider maker to join either. You can be someone who's just really into cider, or someone who's working in the industry in another kind of associated way. But yeah, it's a great organisation and I love it.
Thank you. Yeah, I do. Same as you. 2018 was also, it was the same year I got involved with the association. I joined the committee that year, and I think if I hadn't, then I would never have developed to be someone that was so passionate about cider, because it's sharing and engaging with your peers is so important to find that love for what we do, because so much of our time is spent on our own, working in the orchard on our own, or with one other person, bottling at home, sending the product out. You don't get to see people drinking it, so it's wonderful to have that network with your fellow cider makers. That you, and then you can come to all call them friends rather than just peers, which is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I always think of all the other cider makers as colleagues, actually, in my head, like you're all my colleagues. It doesn't really feel like there's any kind of competition in Ciderland, does it? Just feels really nice. Everyone's sort of supporting each other, and yeah, we're all co-workers.
Absolutely, absolutely. So in 2019, spearheaded a lot by our then chair James Forbes, the association held the first ever CraftCon, which, as I mentioned at the start of the episode, is a nationwide trade conference for cider making, and as Lydia has correctly pointed out, open to anybody, and wherever they are in the country, however much cider they make, even if you make none at all, you can buy a ticket and come along. And it was really a landmark event. I did some I've been doing some historical research, almost looking at the old minutes and stuff from the meetings 20 years ago. And a lot of what we put on the agenda at CraftCon was being shared then, but in these small meetings, just with probably 10, 15 people attending. So it's amazing that we're building on that legacy now with this event. So this will be our 5 years of CraftCon. We had to miss 2020 and 2022, unfortunately. Coronavirus the first time, and then just kind of difficulties got in the way of 22. But so it'll be our fourth time hosting the event. One of them was online. And this year, CraftCon is April 5th and 6th at the Royal Agricultural University in Cirencester. Tickets are on sale right now. If you go to craftcon.co.uk, you can book your tickets for both days if you can attend both days, or either day if your schedule only lets you come to one day. Very, very important event. And delighted to say that my Cider Voice co-host, soon to be officially published author of the world's only guide to Perry, Adam, is giving the keynote address to open the conference on the Friday. Adam, are you looking forward to that? Are you nervous? Or now that you've been a speaker at CiderCon, it's no big deal just speaking to a bunch of UK producers?
Well, CiderCon was really easy, like we said, because you know, although there was a daunting number of people and I knew barely any of them, really, I could just sort of shovel questions in your direction and you did all the hard work. So it's definitely, I think, more daunting than CiderCon. And especially since you very kindly invited me to come and give the keynote address, which, yeah, I'm really looking forward to. I mean, last year was my first time speaking at CraftCon, and that was also on Perry. So a year ahead warm-up for another talk on Perry. But yeah, no, I can't wait. It's such an amazing event. And I actually, the 2019 CraftCon, I couldn't make, but I remember I visited James and Susanna for the very first time about a month before it was on. And, you know, this was when I'd kind of been going down the rabbit hole for like a year or two, probably less than that, but really just on Twitter. I hadn't kind of gone out and had too much opportunity to go and meet makers. I think I'd met you literally just about, you know, a month or two beforehand, and meeting James and Susanna for the first time. But Susanna obviously was, as she always does, you know, talking so enthusiastically and passionately, and you know, saying, oh, you know, you must come along, even though, you know, I you know, had absolutely no, you know, background in cider. So, you know, and I was really, really sad that that it clashed with something else. And then obviously the next year was the pandemic, and the year after was the digital one, which was brilliant to do, but you know, so it wasn't until last year that I actually got to go to an in-person CraftCon. And yeah, just echoing what you've already said, but from a I'm not an organizer, so I'm not biased perspective, it really is a brilliant event.
I went as a punter for 2 years and was so inspired by it that I felt absolutely driven to get involved, because it's so great. That sounds even more biased, but
No, it really is. It really, and I'm sad because for the second year in a row, even though I can go, and it's in person, I can't stay for the whole weekend because my very old, very good friend is getting married the day after, which I think is a fair reason for missing the second day of CraftCon. But you know, anything shy of that is unacceptable.
We'll let you off.
You know, I always see the like the share, the bottle share, and the you know, and all the kind of evening social stuff, and you know, obviously the 2 days of incredible talks. I'm really looking forward to yours, Albert. Actually, I don't know if I can make yours because I don't know if it's on the day that I can do it.
What one do you think I'm doing?
You're doing the bittersweet. I thought you just said that you were doing a bittersweet apples one.
No, I definitely didn't just say that, did I?
You said that at the very start. You said I'm doing bittersweet apples. Either that or the cold has reached my brain and now.
I definitely didn't say that.
We'll listen back because I think. but anyway, I'm doing a talk about tannins and I suppose bittersweet apples, which is pretty exciting. So maybe you did say that you were doing one, but you meant to say that I was doing one. But either way, I'm really excited by it, and I'm excited about all the other kind of you know, talks and tastings. I think it's just kind of grown again year on year, and you know, every year there seem to be more exciting kind of presentations going on, and I think this year is going to be absolutely amazing.
Yeah, we're very much looking forward to it. I'm definitely not giving a talk about bittersweet apples. That's definitely the title of your talk.
I'd be shocked if I said that.
I was hosting it. I'm sure I said that you were, but we will see. And in the edit, if it turns out that I said me, then I will simply edit that out, and you will never know. So either way, I'm going to win.
But Justin's going to be editing this episode, so it'll be all right.
I might claim ownership since he hasn't attended the recording, so we'll see. Anyway, I don't want to go too far down that, even though I was definitely correct.
The good news is you can attend your own talk on bittersweet apples because it's on the first day.
That is definitely good news.
Yeah, that's a relief for all, especially us organisers. If we had got that wrong, we would be down the creek right now. So, Tom, you've been involved like me since the very first one in 2019. How do you think we as a committee, or as, you know, as CraftCon organising, have kind of taken it? And why do you think it's important that we're still, as an association, organising CraftCon?
Well, I think that, I mean, the association, as far as I'm aware, is the largest membership by number of members of cider makers in the UK, who aren't in the kind of stratospheric millions of litres a day kind of bracket, if you know what I mean. And as a result, I mean, we've got over 100 members, right? So as a result, it's kind of incumbent on us, I think, as a trade association, as a group of people who are all trying to further the noble art and the culturally significant art of cider making in the UK. So I just think that, you know, running the conference is a fantastic way of bringing that message out further and improving everybody's ability to make good cider. Because from my point of view, cider is a really easy drink to make, but it's one of the most tricky things to make well. And there's a real gulf of experience and technique and learning and mistakes between making cider and making cider well, in my experience. And helping people bridge that gap and kind of set up a business. And the trouble with cider is it's a hugely capital intensive business. Everyone thinks, oh, well, you just need a couple of barrels and, you know, a couple of apple trees, off you go. And yes, simplistically, that is true, but actually the working capital you have to stick in and the amount of money you have to sink in just like big containers to hold cider for years and years and years because it takes forever to mature. You know, things like that. It all costs money. Then you got to store it somewhere, right? And only after 2 years can you actually sell it. So it's a tricky business to set up and you don't have many chances to get it right because if you get it wrong, you have to throw it away and start again next year. And that all takes forever. I'm rambling away like crazy, but I just hope that CraftCon inspires people to go into it with open eyes and to really concentrate on making a quality product that they are proud to put their name to, and that above all is worth them putting their time and effort and money into in the first place. And ultimately, you know, having really good quality ciders on the market is that's what will drive the market development as far as I'm concerned, because once you've got really good reputation, good quality drinks being made up and down the country by good quality cider makers, then that is when we'll all benefit and do brilliantly.
Yeah, absolutely. I have two points, one of them very quick, that come out of that, which is the first one, something that I think is really cool about CraftCon that we didn't mention. I don't know whether it's coming back this year, but historically there's been, I think you call it the Cider Doctors, where cider makers have the opportunity to come and bring their cider for like tasting and analysis by people like yourself, Albert, and Tom Oliver and others, you know, experts who can kind of give a really kind of in-depth positive feedback on the cider and kind of explain from a technical point of view as well, why things maybe taste as they do, and what makers can do to tweak things if necessary. I think, obviously I'm not a maker, but I've always thought that that's a really tremendous idea, because it's such a, it's also hosted so sensitively and privately in a safe space, and so it just seems like a really, really kind of good thing to take advantage of if you are a maker. That was the first thing. And then to your other your first point, I guess, Tom, when you made the point that the Three Counties Cider and Perry Association, that obviously runs CraftCon, organizes CraftCon, is the biggest of its kind in the country. My question, especially since you've made the point that it is, not only open to makers in the three counties, is there any ambition to kind of, or intent to build the Three Counties Cider and Perry Association out so that it would take on a more national remit?
Well, that's a very timely question, Adam, because...
Yeah, I was going to say, Albert already has, I think, strong opinions on such a matter. I think I would support them, yeah.
Likewise.
It's very much the remit of my... chairpersonship of the association. I'm chair the next 2 years. Is that there's a feeling amongst committee and amongst the members of the association who are participating and showing up at the AGM, etc., that our association, which for 5 years has been organising the only trade conference cider in the UK, which is connecting more cider makers than any other association in Britain, can still do more, can still achieve more, and needs to achieve more, because there is a gap where producers like ourselves, like Artist Draw, and like everyone else we've mentioned today, aren't really fully being represented. Case in point, the government in August overhauled the duty system in a way that is completely unworkable for small producers, and anyone who made cider could have told them that instantly, and we wouldn't be where we are. But fundamentally, there's just a miss. The people in power, they just don't get it. They don't understand our pressing cycle, how cider is really made in as a real natural cider producer, etc. So these people need representation. One of our members, Phil Palmer, is still pressing apples from last season's vintage. He's got Dungarton's Late Sweet to go, one ton of black Dabernets to go. It's February. And fundamentally, the government doesn't understand this. Now, right now, he's not above the duty limit, so it doesn't matter. And that's essentially how HMRC are playing it. They're basically just saying, oh, get something in and we'll accept it, because the system doesn't work, which is ludicrous. Imagine that for any other kind of tax. It just doesn't work, and you just tell them how much they owe, and then they don't understand how we're making cider. Honestly, it's bonkers. But we don't want to talk about duty too much, because it goes on forever. It's the same in Neutral Cider Hotel. Once you start talking about duty, it's all cider makers want to talk about, because it dominates our lives in a way that it doesn't people in other countries. Anyway.
Don't worry, Albert. There's plenty of opportunity to talk about duty at CraftCon.
Yeah, absolutely right. So the three counties, it is basically the important thing for people to take away if they listen to this podcast and they're coming to CraftCon, is it's your opportunity to be involved in the restructuring and the planning of growing our association, making it more significant, more professional, more membership fees, but greater achievement and ambition in what we can do. We have, out of the AGM that was hosted a week ago, a new subcommittee that's working to create a proposal, which we will bring to a general meeting at CraftCon for Three Counties members only, to vote on how it progresses, whether it's accepted there and then, whether it's accepted with considerations or whatever is the outcome. But our ambition is to take our association that has been doing such good work for 31 years and make sure it can achieve very, very good work in the next 31 years. Because right now it's entirely volunteer driven. nobody that works for the Three Counties or, you know, contributes to the Three Counties rather gets paid or anything like that. It's just cider makers and people close to the industry giving up their time for the benefit of all of our members, which is wonderful. But it limits what we can do. And we don't want to be limited. As Tom has so eloquently just described, all of our ambitions is to see the UK cider market healthier, bigger, more producers, more orchards being taken care of, more high quality cider getting out there. And that's absolutely the ambition of the association. So yeah, it's great, right? It's super exciting. Imagine the Three Counties, but more. I love it. I've been very galvanized ever since the AGM. Becky will be able to tell you that I basically haven't stopped thinking about cider, thinking about what we can do and getting everyone together. So
exactly the same. We've had like constant conversations. It's so exciting. I think the position the association's in at the moment, it's brilliant. There's like a really, really good team, driven completely and solely by love of cider. I can't wait for this next couple of years. I think it's going to be really good. And you should get involved.
From standing back from a sort of dispassionate treasurer's point of view, I think that the committee and the organisational group and also the organisational kind of internal knowledge about putting on CraftCon that's built up over the last few years, that's really strong now. And I'm just so confident that the forthcoming CraftCon will be an absolutely cracking event. Then things will go really well and really smoothly. And the program's shaping up to be really wholesome and diverse. I just think, you know, it's just getting better and better and better. And I really hope that loads of people feel inspired to come and contribute to it by turning up and taking part.
I think also we shouldn't downplay. I mean, there's a hell of a lot of learning that happens at CraftCon, and that's, you know, that's the sort of driving force of it. But actually, it's just really fun as well. We have an amazing bottle share, which is always one of the highlights, because getting 100 cider makers in a room together, and we always say, like, bring a bottle, and inevitably everyone turns up with like a case. So there's like piles of cider. It's just amazing fun, and it's, you make lifelong friends at that event, or that's what's happened to me anyway. When I was there in 2019, a few of us had the idea to form Cider Women, which is another association that's come out of CraftCon. So we represent women working in the industry. That was formed at the 2019 CraftCon bottle share after quite a lot of cider.
Yeah, and a lot of good has come from cider women being around, so it's wonderful. Lydia, can you just carry on talking about that for a moment, as your perspective as someone that's taken on more and more responsibility for Artistraw Cider and the output that the two of you have got? How has CraftCon helped your journey as a cider maker, like personally?
I think, yeah, it's exactly that. It's getting to meet other people in the industry. I think when I first started, I just... Yeah, Tom, we moved to Herefordshire. We didn't really know anyone. So having that sort of, well, I don't know, just seeing what other people are doing. And actually everyone's been so, so open. And I'm sure any cider maker will tell you that other cider makers are so, so sharing and very, very, transparent. And I mean, we all just want to talk about cider all the time, is my experience. So, you can sort of learn so much from people that way. I mean, the joy of it is that we all make completely different stuff as well. There's no way we could replicate each other. So this sort of the element of like any kind of competition is immediately extinguished, because it's just, we're just super passionate about making the things that we make in our own way, but sort of each learning from each other. What was the original question? I feel like I've just sort of rambled my way into
I think you answered it perfectly.
I did. Oh, good.
Something I wanted to ask actually quickly, because we've obviously talked about... you know, the fact that there are loads and loads of exciting sessions to attend at this year's CraftCon, and we've talked about your bittersweet session, Albert, and we've talked about my parents. But what are some examples of things that we've that you've got booked in, if you can say at this early stage?
Yeah, I'm really excited. So we've got a couple of orcharding sessions. So orcharding is really one of my favourite things about cider making. So I always like to make sure there's some orcharding stuff on there. So we're doing a panel discussion on sort of future-proofing orchards. So what varieties to plant in a changing climate, which I think will be fascinating. So Harvey from Welsh Mountain Cider has just confirmed that she'll be on that panel today. So that's very exciting because those guys know absolutely loads about growing all sorts of varieties at their amazing cidery. So yeah, that'll be great. Tom, what are you looking forward to?
Me, I'm looking forward to the multitude of tasting sessions that will start at 9 a.m. sharp every day.
They won't quite start at 9 a.m. sharp, but I was going to bring that up because it's something that the ACA talked about a lot, is how sensory analysis forms part of CiderCon. And it's, I know, our cider makers, we just like getting together, talking about cider and having fun. So we have 8 tasting sessions at CraftCon. 8 opportunities to taste cider, discuss it with all of your peers, colleagues, friends, across and all kinds of tastings. We've got tastings of cake conditioned cider, tastings of cider brandy, tastings of tannic ciders, tastings of faulty ciders, which is maybe less fun. We've got a food pairing session. We've got barrel fermented ciders. We've got, actually, this is a really cool thing. This is the first, this is going to be public. Well, unless you could check the website, I suppose, which is very public. But we're going to have a presentation from the Association of Italian Pommeliers, who are coming over and giving a presentation and tasting of Italian cider. There's going to be a tasting of traditional methods. Just amazing ways to basically expand your palate, expand your understanding of flavors in cider, and come away 5 o'clock at the end of every day feeling very, very happy and ready to participate in the bottle share.
I can't wait to listen to the Italian presentation. That's going to be fascinating. And also, just, you know, because it's my cup of tea, I think, what are we calling it? Is it going to be called faulty or natural or something like this? But anyway, that, I'm really looking forward to that session.
Yes, I think that one is going to be very important. So, yeah, the current title is work in progress. At the moment, we've got natural or faulty. I did have something more, but it's still being decided. But essentially, what we're going to have is a blind tasting of real ciders available to buy commercially on the UK market. If you go out to a shop, you might end up buying one of these ciders. Actually, my tasting better than natural, but it's what's natural and what's not. A false discussion of blind tasting, which I think is quite good. Four or five ciders with a panel of experts. And I'm leaning towards none of them being cider makers, because I want it to be like, it's for the cider makers who are attending to get the perspective of the people that are actually selling the cider, rather than us being like, well, that's just how it tastes, which is, you know, the default setting when a lot of us have said, oh, actually, I don't quite like that. So, you know, we're going to be looking at all kinds of aspects of what is natural and what is not. And if you leave your cider outside with no lid, then you may end up with a natural bit of acetic acid or the like, but maybe it shouldn't be there. That's the point of the discussion.
I'm really looking forward to your completely neutral take on this session, Albert.
Well, I'll be dead silent. All I'm going to do is, along with my committee, today I ordered 12 ciders from various different cideries in search of a cider that's worth putting on this panel and having us discuss it. And not something that's terribly wrong, but something that is worth discussing. So we're going to find real ciders out there on the market, and bring them to that. And then it'll be all blind and we'll never reveal who they are. So it's not at all trying to, you know, mudsling anyone. But I think, as Tom's been pointing out, like, you can make cider. Can you make it well? That's the big question. That's what we want everyone to be able to do. And, you know, speaking personally, been involved in cider full time for seven and a half years. Mostly at Ross and Wye, we make good cider, but I don't feel that we make the best cider we can do. And I feel there's still stuff to learn every year, and different perspectives to take. So all this stuff is super valuable, no matter how long you've been here, for everybody.
As someone who drinks more Ross cider than we do of our own, I'm excited that you think it's not the best that you can make. I'm excited for because Ross cider is amazing.
That's good. That's our one per episode plug of Ross Cider by someone that isn't me. Ticked. So thanks, Lydia. We've kept that streak going.
I was actually going to ask, just having glimpsed your glass, whether you've moved on to Ross Cider following the Ailey, or maybe it's just the light in my in on my screen. It looks like you have progressed to bittersweet colour.
What I've done is the Ailey's medium and extremely drinkable, but I don't want too much sugar at once because I'm already getting quite excited talking about CraftCon. So I've got a stopper on my bottle halfway down, and I've gone back to what I was drinking before, which is a single variety we bottled in November of Not Balls Bittersweet, which is a variety that we have one row of on the farm. In fact, two rows now, because we've grafted it. And then after we grafted more of it, we found out that it is not Balls Bittersweet. Balls Bittersweet is a variety propagated by Edward Ball, who was the head orchardist or nurseryman at H.B. Bulmers in 1932. And then we bought the same, you know, the same variety from them. It's been in their care for 50 years in the mid 80s and planted it. And then we did DNA fingerprinting last year and found out that it is not Balls Bittersweet. This variety that they've been the custodians of all that time, that we bought from them, is the wrong variety, which goes to tell you, you know, an awful lot, really. It shows a lot of light on what the reality of day-to-day orcharding is like. Cause...
I mean, it's still not as extreme as the entire country believing that it had planted one variety of apples, and then it turns out to be a completely different, and the French are like, what are you on about? That's not Michelin.
Well, yeah, absolutely, but I think that there's still more to this story to come, because as part of CraftCon, Lydia reached out to Jonathan Gould, who's a big-time orchardist in Cornwall. Well, not big-time. Big-time's the wrong way, but passionate orchardist is what I mean. And I then messaged Jonathan as well, because at CraftCon, we're having a scion exchange, which will also form part of a session about grafting and top working from Tom and from Leo Jordan of Blue Barrel Cider. For which Jonathan Gould is going to... He's basically sending scion to anyone in the UK. So if you want weird and interesting scions, he's got a few. But he reckons he is growing both Biscay and Michelin. Which is very curious.
And can't see a difference. I was interested in that as well.
What, so the apples are very, very similar, what, Michelin and Biscay?
That's what he says.
Can't see any for us a difference in the two.
So if you go, and he's got his Michelin from what, France, presumably?
Yeah, I think so. Both are from France.
Well,
I think
he says his Michelin was from Tarleton apples. I don't know what.
Oh, okay.
Who they are? If they're a nursery or something. And but his Biscay definitely came from France. But anyway, and so yeah, basically apples. We never get to the bottom of any of it. Maybe one day we will, but. I got a message from my apple expert the other day saying that he's discovered an old foxwhelp tree. So the foxwhelp before our current foxwhelp is foxwhelp.
So we wonder if some old foxwelp, because we harvest ours from some enormously old trees, which are also enormous. But how old are they, Tom? They're probably like 100, aren't they? 100 years old, and they're completely different to any other foxwhelp that we have get hold of, basically. I mean, they're still definitely fox whelp, but unmistakably fox whelp, but they're different to
am I right in thinking it was about 130, 140 years ago that the Woolhope Club did its kind of drive to save the fox whelp variety, along with the Tainton squash variety, which I have no idea what that actually involved. But I know that, you know, they were concerned that foxwelp was going to be lost, and so they did some manner of whatever you do that somebody more pomologically minded than me would maybe be able to explain. But you know, so I, you know, when you're talking about like the different sports of foxwelp, I am, without wishing to go out on a completely different tangent, quite interested in, like, you know, how did these different sports come about, and when, and was it anything to do with what they did at the Woolhope Club?
Well, I'm a member of the Woolhope Club, so I'll go to the library and I will find out for you and report back. But yeah, I don't know the answer to that. But yeah, it is interesting.
Broadly, it is. There is a very confusing history with foxwelp, because in I think it's Hog and Bull, they've got about 7 varieties of foxwelp, and one of them is rejuvenated foxwelp, and they have this bizarre story. And Tom, and Lydia, maybe you can kind of comment on it. But they basically say that by repeatedly grafting foxwelp, they changed it from old foxwelp to new foxwelp and rejuvenated the variety. But, I mean, it doesn't seem plausible to me.
Right.
Is that how grafting works? I don't think it is.
So that presumably would be what they were talking about, you know, when they're talking about how they kind of saved foxwelp and Tainton squash. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I think Yeah, I don't know enough about epigenetics of plants to comment on the repeated grafting improving or changing the genetics of it in a good way. But I think I'm aware that sort of it's sort of expected over many, many generations of grafting that the quality of the genetics does degrade. Because it, you know, is further from the seed, if you like.
Yeah, well, fox whelp is like in the same way that Pinot Noir in wine just loves throwing kind of sports and you know making these small changes, so it's still you know Pinot Noir, but it's kind of had its little micro mutation or whatever it is genetically. You know, that again is miles over my head. And fox whelp, I feel like I read somewhere, you know, ties into what you were saying about seven different sorts of fox whelp, Albert. Throws, you know, that's quite prone to throwing sports, isn't it? So I guess maybe their idea is if you just keep grafting enough, eventually, yeah, you'll have one that, as Tom says, is a little bit different and like new enough and different enough that but no, it doesn't have whatever it is that's kind of degrading in all the old trees.
I think it's a fascinating kind of thought experiment because it's very much ship of Theseus is. Fox whelp has been handed down since 1664, but we have, and we will never know. We have no way of ever knowing how different our apples are to their apples, or if they're even the same apples. So much stuff has been hideously confused over time, like Biscay and Michelin.
That's it. I was going to. So I think we've got a fox whelp in our orchard that we because of this exact thing we're talking about. We basically wrote down the name of the person who owned the orchard, so it's called what is it? What's his surname? Can't remember. Anyway, it's like. Foxwell, but
Johnston.
Yeah, I knew I was going to say Johnston. So that's not right because that's your surname. But yeah, Johnston Foxwell, basically. And I'll bet you anything that'll get sort of logged in history on one of my many spreadsheets, and then someone like in 100 years' time will be like, "Oh yeah, the Johnston Foxwell." And it's just because we've written it down. So just as like Crimp's mango apple will probably accidentally become like a variety in like years to come, when it's not actually. Just some stupid name that we came up with because we didn't know what else to call it at the time. So maybe there is just one type of fox and everyone's just accidentally called them different things because they wanted to mark them somehow in their own orchards. Who knows?
Crimp's mango will end up getting, you know, grafted over like everything in the three counties and your name will be forever associated with the monoculture of Crimp's mango that... The entirety of Herefordshire becomes because it turns out that it, you know, A, tastes like a mango and B, crops unbelievably well or something.
It is delicious. I mean, it's basically, now that I'm vice chair of the Three County Cider and Pear Association, I think this is what I'm going to be plumping for. Just putting Crimp's mango apple over everything. We'll top wear the whole of Ross. It'll just be full of Crimp's mango apple. The best apple ever grown.
Hopefully. Because we're going to get some signs of it, so I want it to be delicious.
Going to do a single variety Crimp's mango apple.
Yeah, we're going to graft about 20 trees and see what we got.
And you've got to hope that it tastes really good, Lydia, because otherwise...
No, your face...
Per the Dimmock Red Perry, it will say, you know, this is not a variety noted for its flavour.
Oh my god, we're hinging this on one day where I ate these like 5 years ago. I have no more than that.
Why shouldn't they give it such a good name?
I'm really worried now. But I might have built up the memory quite a lot in my head. I don't know. I mean, I did eat a lot of them. It was about 20. But
well, the big question is, had they started fermenting or not?
No, I don't think so.
They were still fresh.
I mean, it's November.
Then they might have had some yeast activity in the apple that contributed to your merry memory of them.
Anyway,
I quite
good
like
luck.
The idea that with you know, once you've grafted Crimp's mango, and because you've got some Coombe Maddock Beauty as well in the orchards, haven't you? And there's somewhere like there's the one that your dad named after you. You could create the like. Ultimate Herefordshire cider makers blend that's entirely like apples that are in some way.
Yeah, because I've got one seedling growing, well, graft growing terribly, which is actually a seedling from the driveway at James and Susanna's house. So yeah, I'm collecting everybody like they're Pokemon, growing them on the farm, and then I like the idea of releasing a cider makers blend.
Coombe Maddock Beauty is a nicer name. shrimp's mango apple, though. I wish I'd thought more about this.
I mean, one's kind of aspirational romantic, and everyone's really appealing for that supermarket shelf, pick me up and bite me type of say. No, I just want to say, well, maybe move on. I don't know, we've covered most of it about, you know, the concept of an apple variety and an apple and trees having names and this kind of thing. Because, you know, in Hog and Bull, they've got a apple Black Foxwell, which I don't know if it did survive until now. Possibly not, because what they wrote is, and this is a direct quote from their Pomona, which they still thought to include this apple. They say, the sooner the trees of the Black Foxwell are regrafted or cut down, the better. And they actually published that in their love letter to apples. So it's a fascinating thing, because a lot of the other varieties that are talked about historically as being brilliant or not very good are the inverse. And apples and ciders, they're like, you know, they're moments in time captured. When we put something in a bottle, 2021 Ailey, and it's still tasting so fresh, so delicious, like it's fresh fruit in my mouth. It's an amazing thing to experience. And to make ciders from specific trees that have specific names, even if the names are wrong, it's just like, it's just wow. I had this feeling when I was in America that there's overindulgence in making co-ferments. And actually the incredible, you know, human connection when you're drinking a cider from a specific place is astounding.
I totally agree. You sort of, without sounding far too wafty, you do sort of get to know the trees very, very well. And I love doing... we always do a few very, very small batches of stuff just from single trees, and those are always really exciting, trying those. And I think the way we pick as well, we wait for everything to drop naturally. We don't bash anything with ladders or any of those sort of high tech ways of harvesting that other people like to employ. It means you can end up going back to the same tree, you know, sort of anything up to like 8 or 9 times or whatever, like over a series of weeks, kind of gathering the fruit. So you really, you get to know them quite well.
Adam, have you got anything to comment about harvesting techniques? I know you're a big fan of the ladder method.
Well, I was just going to say that my tree is doing fantastically, as far as I can tell. You know, it's there, it's standing proud in its pot. We didn't get an apple last year, but we got an apple the year before. So hopefully it's an on year in 2024, and we can look forward.
Did you with a ladder?
No. It fell off miles too early, I think. But we didn't eat it. We just left it to shrivel on the mantelpiece. So I can't comment on the quality of the foxwhelp that we grow at, in Reading. But shout out to Andy at Seven Tree Cider who very kindly gave me the tree. Although I kind of hope now, after all this conversation, that it turns out to be a completely different random sport of foxwhelp and completely unique. Hopefully, like, undrinkably astringent and painful in some way. And then it can look forward to being mentioned in a future Pomona as, you know, the sooner the infestation of this new foxwell.
Reading foxwell.
Wells is whelp. is all hacked down and burned, the better. But, you know, one day there'll be enough to make, you know, a cup of cider from the tree. And Justin and I will ferment it and get it wrong and then spill it. But until that day...
You're sounding a little bit, as Tom described earlier, like a doomer.
Well, you know, I think if Justin were here, he'd be the first to agree that any attempt to independently make cider on our part would be doomed at best.
Aren't you responsible for 50% of the output at Ross Cider and Perry Company this year, Adam? That's what I heard.
Well, I think 50% would be a gross exaggeration, but I'm certainly responsible for enough to be considered one of the most important craft cider makers of the UK in 2023. How many litres did you two press in 2023?
You know the answer. We did our usual 6,999 litres. Well, actually, we could have done a bit more this year. How many did we do, actually, Tom? You'll have the full record.
I think about, I think in what we officially put into tank, it gets just over 7,000.
Yeah, so that you've ever made.
And losses. There's two of you, yet only one of Adam, and yet he's produced twice your output.
We didn't have any ladders.
Yeah, that's when you're going.
That was your first error. Although the ladder technique, as I've learned, is specific to the Frederick variety. And possibly not even to the Frederick variety, it might be into that tree only. So I don't have a significant enough pool of evidence to, unless Albert has used that technique on other trees or other, you know, initiates of the Ross on Y.
To be fair, I did use ladder method on Red Steyr. However, rather than bashing the tree with ladder as you elected to do, I climbed my ladder and then pulled off the fruit, which I did in early June because there was a windstorm coming and it was a grafted topwork tree with an enormous crop that I didn't want to fall over. So I had to remove the fruit.
Elected to is an appallingly misleading choice of terms. As was demonstrated to me, and I'll happily call Becky as my first witness.
Coming briefly to the Foxfelt sportiness discussion, I just very quickly wanted to add, for operational reasons, here we had a big pile of almost, I think, not quite pure, but 99% Foxfelt pomace that Lydia dumped in the gateway to a compost area. And rather than moving it, we just let it rot. And then a whole bunch of kind of germination happened on it over the last season, starting in about April. And I looked at this pile of sort of germinating plantlets on a sort of semi-rotten compost heap. And I only picked out the ones which had three cotyledons because I mistakenly thought that might indicate that they're triploids. So I've planted up about a dozen, I think it is, of these three cotyledoned seedlings from a Foxwell compost heap. So if they turn out to be quite sporty, then I think you'll be proved correct, Adam. And we might well have an artist draw Foxwell on our hands. Who knows?
Well, that is fantastic. I'm so in favour of everybody planting new seedlings. So that's very, very cool. Well done, Lydia, for dumping that pomace in an ideal location.
Thank you, Albert.
Okay. To sum it all up, everybody should come to CraftCon, which is on April 5th and 6th. Tickets are available now at craftcon.co.uk. The event is entirely organised by volunteers on behalf of the Free County Cider and Perry Association. It's a two-day event. There's limited accommodation on site if you contact the RAU. Otherwise, the event is held just outside Cirencester. If you are involved in the cider industry in any way, you should come along. You will meet people that will open new doors for you, give you new opportunities, inspire you to do more stuff this year. It's amazing. Before we go, Adam, am I right in saying that pre-orders are open?
Yeah, I was actually for the first time going to remember to make the plug, but on Fruit Cider Voice form, you've beaten me to it. Yeah, pre-orders are indeed open for my book, Perry, A Drinker's Guide. They're on the Camera Books website, but if you Google Perry, A Drinker's Guide Camera, it's more or less the first, it's one of the first links that pops up. So yeah, very excited about that, and please, if you're interested in Perry, pre-order the book, because everybody on this podcast is currently featured in it. And actually, Justin is featured in it, so even he has made it.
Even he. Adam, will you be wearing your official Perry, A Drinker's Guide t-shirt when you deliver your keynote at Craftcon?
I hadn't considered it, but I don't see why not.
I think you should.
I should. Fair enough. Yeah, I will. I will. I don't know when the other t-shirts are going out, by the way. I'm nothing to do with that. And I'm absolving myself.
Yeah, don't worry. No. Presumably they'll be posted out with the books, I guess.
Well, I should hope so. Yeah. It's kind of a shame that CraftCon's happening just before the book comes out. But actually that's something else that I want to might as well plug, is that I don't think it's been really properly announced yet, but it's the book will be out on May the 2nd, and we are currently in discussion about doing the launch at the Yew Tree at Ross on Wye. So, you know, that's a sort of date for people to vaguely pencil into a diary if they can.
I've literally penciled it. Pencil in my hand. It's in there.
And I just say, it's not in discussion. It's happening. If you pull out now, I'll never forgive you. It's in everybody's diaries. So yeah, May the 2nd at the Yew Tree to celebrate the launch of Perry a Drinker's Guide. But there may be other events that week around the country. But that one is definitely, definitely happening.
Oh, I didn't mean to imply that it was in discussion in terms of whether it was happening or not. I meant in discussion in terms of we haven't figured out the exact shape of that it will take.
But, well, okay, you know. I think we haven't figured out the exact drinks menu, but I think we're basically going to taste 5 Perrys, have some specially paired pizzas, read an extract from the book, probably about how good Ross and Wye is, since, as I hear, that's most of the book. and you know, and then finish drinking Waterford whiskey, as we must.
Perfect, done. Sold.
All right, I'll see all of our 13 listeners at the Yew Tree on May the 2nd, even if you're one of our American listeners, we'll be expecting
you for
this. Yeah?
I hate that actually Tom and I are 2 of your listeners, so actually there'll only be 11 listeners this week.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
You'll listen back to it, to be fair. So we'll still get a quota. And I met another listener as well this week, one of the 12 or 13. I've given it some consideration, and for all the people that we've heard say, I'm one of them, I still think actually that we've miscalculated and it is still 12. But anyway, another of our 12 listeners was Aga from Fine Cider Company. So yeah, big shout out there, and thanks very much. It was lovely to meet for the first time in person. So I just thought I'd mention that whilst we're talking about our 12 listeners on the podcast.
You should dedicate an episode to each listener over the course of a year. Have a listener's calendar.
Yeah. If people want to sign up to be on the listener's calendar, it's £100 per episode, and you can email albert@cidervoice.com. Okay, Tom and Lydia, where can people buy your cider? Have you got any events coming up? How can they support Artistry?
Well, funnily enough, we've just been talking to the author of the first book on Perry today, who might be coming to do a talk at Artistry Cider at the end of May to coincide with Hay Festival. So that's very hot off the press. But yeah, you can buy it directly from our website, www.artistry.co.uk. Or we have a very small shop here on site where we are, just outside Hay on Wye, which is very lovely and full of books and nice things. We do tours and tastings, and there is also a list of other stockists on our website, www.artistore.co.uk.
But for Cellador pricing, come and visit our on site shop. Also, local to Hay on Wye or Clifford listeners can support us on the 1st of March when we'll be running a pop-up pub in Hardwick Village Hall, and again on the 20th
of the list is that, do you reckon? And
we are also appearing at the first Saturday of the month market in Prestine in the old school hall, and we'll be doing every Thursday as usual at the Hay on Wye market, and the first Saturday of the month at the Hay on Wye market from April onwards, I think I'm right in saying. So support us those markets, and also we're available at all good quality food fairs and festivals coming up through the summer.
Basically, if you want it, we'll sell
it. And to answer your earlier point, Lydia, I reckon that a significant portion of our 12 listeners, even including the ones who live in America, are really local to Clifford. So I think that this shout out will do your pop-up a world of good.
Absolutely. Okay, everybody, go straight to craftcon.co.uk and buy your tickets. Thank you very much for listening.
Consider joining the Three Counties Cider and Perry Association.
You should also do that.
Good association to be involved with.